This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Futuro.
Dear listener, there's some language in this episode that might be offensive.
In DR, the maternal death rate is already higher than the average in Latin America, at 95 deaths per 100,000 births. Other numbers show that 20% of those deaths are a byproduct of unsafe abortions. So these strict laws are not stopping abortions in the DR. They're just making them dangerous.
From Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, the fight for legal abortion in the Dominican Republic. It's been over a year since historic protests in the Dominican Republic led to the end of over 16 years of same-party rule. But on May 23rd, more than 1,000 people took to the streets in the capital of Santo Domingo to protest yet again. But this time, the protests weren't about political corruption. This time, women's rights activists were demanding an end to the nation's total abortion ban. The Dominican Republic has one of the harshest anti-abortion laws in the Americas. Abortion isn't allowed under any circumstances. Only 5 other countries in the continent have such harsh restrictions on ending a pregnancy legally. That's Haiti, Honduras, Nicaragua, Jamaica, and El Salvador. Today, I'm joined by Amanda Alcantara. She's a Dominican journalist and our former digital media editor here at Latino USA. She's going to tell us more about what's happening in her home country where she's based right now and what's going on in the fight for women's reproductive rights on the island. Hey, Amanda, welcome to Latino USA.
Hola, Maria. Thank you for having me today.
So, Amanda, you've been following the protests that have been happening in the Dominican Republic since March. And that's when women's rights activists set up an encampment in the capital in Santo Domingo. More recently, there was a national march where a lot of people in the protests were chanting something pretty particular. They were saying las tres causales, which can basically be translated into the three grounds or the three circumstances. So that's a las tres causales. I mean, it's like it doesn't roll right off of your tongue.
I know.
I'm trying to think if I've ever used the word causales anywhere in my life in Spanish. And I'm like, I don't think I've ever used that word. So ¿qué es esto de que las tres causales?
Yeah, so the tres causales, which was a word that I've personally gotten very used to saying because I've been in the middle of these protests, they're basically three circumstances under which women would be allowed to have an abortion. And these are considered sort of the basic circumstances, right? So it's when there has been a case of rape or incest, when the fetus is non-viable, and when the health of the woman is at risk. And the thing is, Maria, these are considered basic human rights.
So it's actually a big deal to have these three causales, because in some places you don't have any. In other words, abortion is illegal, no ifs, ands, or buts, right?
Yes, that's right. And one of those places is the Dominican Republic.
So in the Dominican Republic right now, even if a woman's life is at risk, even if there's a case of incest, it's illegal for them to seek an abortion?
Yes, it's illegal. And there have been cases of women and girls who have passed away because they haven't had access to an abortion while being at the hospital, while doctors know that this could save their life. And it's honestly very angering, you know, because it's like basic, you know, it's like the minimum, right? So people are not asking for free abortion access. This is rather only under these three cases. And it has been very, very difficult for feminists and activists and women to get these three approved because conservatives and Christians have such a stronghold on the government here.
And that stronghold on the government isn't new. In fact, this law is based on a penal code that was passed in the year. And so, okay, let me get this right here. This penal code was passed in the year 1884, and it's still being used. I mean, are we serious here?
Yes. Yes, we are serious. When I first reported on this story, I'm going to be honest with you, I wrote 1984 because I thought that was the right number. And then when I was fact-checking, it blew my mind that it was actually 1884.
So how does that 1884 penal code have anything to do with what's happening now in terms of women and reproductive rights?
Right now, the penal code says women can go to prison for up to 2 years if they have an abortion, and up to 20 years for doctors who practice abortions.
Wow.
So what's happening now is that the penal code is actually being reviewed by this new government that was sworn in last year. If you remember the story that we did last year that I spoke to you about, the previous ruling party had been in government for about 16 years. And last year, the Dominican Republic made history when they voted in a new government headed by Luis Abinader. During his campaign, he said that he was in favor of the three causales. And then when he became president, one of the things that his new government took on was revising this penal code. However, when they initially presented their reform in Congress, it did not include the three causales.
So did the candidate, Abinader, make a promise during his campaign to kind of deliver on passing the three causales?
Basically, Luis Abinader, he didn't quite promise that he would pass the three causales when he was running for president. But he did say that he supports them. However, when the revision of the penal code started, he kind of changed his stance to say that, you know what, this is not only a political issue, this is also a religious issue. So I'm going to leave it up to Congress to make this decision. Here is Luis Abinader speaking during an interview with Agencia EFE on April 19.
Yo pienso que ese es, todo el mundo sabe que estoy a favor de las tres causales. Y en ese sentido es una decisión que como una decisión que implica muchos temas, no solamente un tema de salud, sino también un tema religioso.
So, activists and feminists took to the street in that moment to protest and to demand that these three causales be included in the new penal code.
So it's interesting because I think people understand that abortion rights are under attack in the United States. But basically, you're having feminists and their allies and other women say, basically, we just want you to say it's okay to get an abortion if there's incest, rape, or the woman's life is in danger. And even that is a source for a tremendous amount of activism. So in certain countries, going ahead and getting an abortion can have some really tough consequences as well. For example, tell us about what happens in El Salvador to a woman who wants to get an abortion.
In El Salvador, it's also completely illegal to get an abortion under any circumstances. The punishment there is harsh. Women can face over 30 years in prison, and at least 18 women have actually been prosecuted and imprisoned. Even though we have this penal code here in Dominican Republic, there are very few cases that actually get prosecuted by law. Basically, the police doesn't really pursue these cases, for the most part, unlike El Salvador. However, there have been cases that haven't pursued, like one of a 20-year-old woman who was given pain medication and she ended up going to the hospital, losing the baby, and she was taken to trial because she was accused of having an illegal abortion. And it's interesting because I was reading the news about what's happening in the United States now. And with Roe versus Wade going back into the Supreme Court, that's essentially what would happen in the U.S., what is already happening here. It's that abortion would only be accessible to those who can afford it.
All right. So if you are not wealthy and you need to get an abortion in the Dominican Republic, Amanda, you've been doing reporting on the ground in the DR. So tell us a little bit about what you learned about what that looks like for women right now.
I spoke to a gynecologist and I spoke to several people who confirmed that getting an abortion here is possible, but only for women who are able to pay. So what ends up happening is that women who live in poverty, women who are marginalized, women who are disenfranchised do not have access to an abortion. And this creates a situation of inequality. This is Lilian Fander, the gynecologist I spoke with.
First, you need to have the information, and it costs money. And it costs time, because it's not the same to have an abortion if you are 25, that if you are 15, it's not the same, because you don't have experience, you don't have information, you don't know how to do it.
As a gynecologist, she has attended many teenage girls who got pregnant, in some cases against their will. When it comes to underage girls giving birth, data from the National Office of Statistics showed the number of cases of persons under 14 years old giving birth. And they were alarming. In the last 10 years, there's been 34,307 cases. In the Caribbean, Dominican Republic and Guyana have the highest adolescent pregnancy numbers.
It's a crime in our law to have sex with child, but it's just in the paper. If you are under 15, you are a teenager, but you are also, you're not a complete human being to be responsible for other people.
It's very difficult for women living in poverty to have an abortion. And at times, what happens is that women take matters into their own hands and put their own life at risk. So the symbol of the percha or the hanger was something that was used by artists during the protests to represent that women use hangers, like clothing hangers, to perform abortions on themselves. There was a case where a woman hit her stomach with a block of cement, a block of concrete, in order to induce an abortion.
Oh, so, my goodness.
Yes. Yeah. And
I think we've heard such, you know, horrible stories of situations of women being so desperate, but then you forget how desperate you can feel if you have no out in something like this. That's hard, Amanda.
Yeah, it's very hard. And so what these activists want is for the system to take on this issue so that women can go to a hospital and can get an abortion in a way that is safe, in a way that is secure. Again, these are circumstances where basically women don't have to be re-victimized by the circumstances under which they got pregnant, right? So if we're talking about someone who got pregnant because of a rape case, if then you're telling that person that they cannot get an abortion, you are re-victimizing them. And when it comes to women who are at risk because of their pregnancy, these are some of the cases that have gotten the most attention, especially the case of Rosaura, whose nickname is Esperancita. So she was the 16-year-old girl that she needed cancer treatment for leukemia, and it was denied by the doctors because she was pregnant, and she ended up passing away.
Rosaura Almonte es la joven que públicamente se conoció como Esperanza. La adolescente de 16 años que estaba embarazada tenía leucemia y cuyo tratamiento chocó de frente con el artículo 37 de la Constitución.
When the case of Rosaura Esperancita happened, Fandor was actually there to speak out about that issue too. And we actually have tape of her at that time.
Si esta niña no hubiese estado embarazada, le dan el tratamiento inmediato. Si fuese un hombre, le dan el tratamiento inmediato.
What Dr. Fander said is that if Esperancita hadn't been pregnant, or if she had been a man, she would have gotten the treatment. That the medical protocol for a case like this is to end the pregnancy in the first trimester so that the patient can get the treatment. This is the case that happened over 10 years ago. And her mom has been very outspoken to this day about how she says the system basically took her daughter from her.
Pero a mi hija me la destruyeron. Y eso no lo voy a dejar de decir. Cuidaron a un mes de embarazo. Y que lo escuche el mundo entero.
And this is actually a case that was taken on by the Inter-American Commission of Human Rights, because even from an international standpoint, it's sort of an indictment on the system here.
Coming up on Latino USA, we learn about what the women of the Dominican Republic are doing to get their right to safe and legal abortions, and how their fight is part of a larger wave across Latin America. Stay with us. No te vayas.
Support for Latino USA comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is an all-in-one management software with apps for every business need. Odoo has apps for CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, manufacturing, and everything in between, and they're all in one easy-to-use software. And the best part about Odoo? All Odoo apps are integrated, helping you get things done faster and more efficiently. So when you think about business, think Odoo. To learn more, visit odoo.com/latino. That's odoo.com/latino.
We're back. And before the break, we were speaking with journalist Amanda Alcantara about the history and the consequences of the total abortion ban that's been in place in the Dominican Republic since the year 1884. It's a legacy that feminists and activists on the island have been fighting for decades to change. Over the last few months, the chance of reaching a legal reform has gotten closer than ever before, but there are still a lot of challenges. We're going to get back now to our conversation with journalist Amanda Alcantara. All right, for a moment, let's talk a little bit about the power of the women in the Dominican Republic. So I'm thinking historically, for example, Las Hermanas Mirabal, the Mirabal sisters, who were at the forefront of bringing down the dictatorship in the DR of Trujillo. So there's this kind of sense of blood, ancestry, and resistance that runs in the kind of collective culture of the Dominican Republic and the women there. And as part of the recent protests to pass these three causales, women's rights activists decided to build a camp in the capital, Santo Domingo. So tell us a little bit about this camp, who created it, and who was there.
The camp was basically a spontaneous formation that began on March 11 when activists came out and protested for the Tres Causales. When Congress got together to begin revising the Penal Code, and these activists and feminists saw that they weren't including the three causales in the Penal Code, they decided, we're going to stay here and camp out. And they were there for 73 days total. I actually visited the camp on one of those days, and I spoke to an activist there. Her name is Sarai Figuereo. She is a young queer educator and advocate who spoke to me about why she decided to protest and why she even camped out on certain nights.
Why a camp?
It's a way of showing that we are not resting. We are here. We are looking at you. We are just in front of you. So you have to see us and you have to listen to us. And showing that this is important for us.
I actually spoke to another activist who has stayed there almost every night, Angela Fermin Montero, and she showed me her tent. In the tent, she had a twin-sized mattress and some personal items like a book bag and some clothes. The activists there made deals with local restaurants to give out food. you know, in the camps, Maria, they held conversations, they held talks. They also had some activities to kind of keep the activists, to keep their energy up, right? So they had some activities like yoga classes. And while I was there, some interesting things happened. So when I was about to start the interview with Sarai, there was a woman who approached us who said that she needed help because she was being harassed.
Por la forma que ella se expresó, yo estoy casi segura que ella no se acuerda con la causal, pero como quiera sintió que era un espacio donde podría encontrar como contacto, sí. Seguridad, y algún asunto confidencial.
And this was interesting because it kind of showed that this camp was becoming something more than just a space to talk about the three causales. But the activists there saw this as showing how the camp was also becoming a place for people to go advocate for their human rights. And while I was at the camp, Maria, I couldn't get this on tape, but there was a car that drove by and said, "Vayan a parir, bandidas." Like, he yelled at everyone who was there.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I know.
Which basically means, go give birth, you know, rabble-rousers.
Yes.
Lesser respectful terms.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so even though the activists, they had been very energetic and very passionate, they weren't necessarily feeling safe in the camps.
So there has been verbal harassment of the protesters, but there was violence as well against the women who were camping out.
Yeah, so in the early morning of April 20, when they started debating the penal code in Congress, some activists set up another camp there, and it was evicted by the police, who had ripped the tents with knives and also used some sort of gas spray. The next day, different organizations, including representatives from the United Nations and public officials, stood up for the women. And a government official said that these actions don't represent the administration. So they tried to distance themselves from the police and the police's actions. But it still happened. And the activists are still facing attacks and a lot of backlash. Here's Sarai again, one of the activists staying at the camp.
I feel like really powerful showing it in the street. Like, yes, I'm for the three causales. I'm in favor. Like, see me, I'm here. But sometimes, like, it's scary because I shouldn't do that. But if you go, like, to section comments in Facebook or the digital newspapers, you see, like, a lot of violence. You see violence and you see hate and you stop feeling safe.
I also spoke to another woman who did have an abortion. Her name is Gina Goico. She is an activist and an artist currently living in New York City, which is why she's being open about it, because she says that she feels safe since she's not in Dominican Republic anymore. And she told me that she felt that she was only able to access an abortion because she was middle class, because she went to a gynecologist who basically instructed her on what to do. Here's Gina.
Like, he first of all, like, he berated me because I was pregnant, right? Like, oh my God, like, how am I doing this to my family? So the shame starts, like, from the get-go. And he was the one who, like, immediately told me, like, oh yeah, like, you're getting an abortion. So he just told me, like, don't worry, like, I'm gonna get everything. And he got someone to send to my house, like, a mensajero, like a delivery guy to get me the pills and get me everything. So he told me, like, quickly what I have to do. But then he also told me, like, by the way, like, I cannot see you again after this.
So Gina took the abortion pills and had to go to another gynecologist to follow up. And she says that she felt very lonely and very scared, that she had to go through the pain of the abortion alone, because the doctor told her, I'm going to give you these pills, but you won't be able to see me anymore.
Afterwards, it was fucking terrible. It was, I think, like, the whole night and part of the morning, just, like, in pain. And then, like, 2 days later, going and checking, like, to make sure that I didn't have any residues inside of me.
And in some of the worst case scenarios, she says that some of her friends who have had abortions in a similar way, then also face shame or even violence when returning to the hospital. Here's Gina again, relating a friend's experience.
So we go to the hospital. She gets a sonogram. She gets the abortion and she goes back like a week after, because this is procedural. You need to make sure that nothing is there. And it was the same technician doing this sonogram. And she was using one of those like pelvic sonograms that you enter through the vagina. And she was being really violent and committing like obstetric violence against her because she realized what happened. So she was just like, oh, look at this. Oh, so now you don't have any child inside of you.
Gina told me her friend felt uncomfortable with the way the technician was behaving and using offensive language.
And she was like, un gustazo, un trancazo, ni modo. It's going to hurt.
Here she used a Dominican phrase that means, once you make a certain decision, you also have to deal with the pain of that decision. So there's a lot of shame. There's a lot of shame around this issue. And even for women who are able to access an abortion is also not easy peasy. And in the end, the fact that it's illegal means that there's a lot of fear around going through this procedure.
I hadn't thought about how difficult it must be to be an OBGYN, a gynecologist in the DR. Is there something that Dr. Funder is able to do to help at all?
Something that Dr. Funder told me is that the fact that these causales haven't been passed makes it difficult for her to do her job because when you become a doctor, you take on a Hippocratic oath that you're supposed to protect people. You're supposed to help save people's lives. And the lack of these causales make it difficult for her to do her basic job of protecting her patients.
We have women that are on risk of dying because they are pregnant, or they can't receive the treatment correctly because they are pregnant. You know, that's really difficult if you are a doctor and you want to save life. That's the way we were training, to save life.
So Amanda, if you have doctors that are saying that the tres causales, in fact, are needed in the Dominican Republic, if women are suffering and people are seeing this and these stories are connecting to people, women dying unnecessarily because they can't have access to reproductive rights. So why is it still so hard to pass these laws?
Well, first is the whole 1884 Penal Code. But also, the Catholic Church has a lot of power in day-to-day life. Here's Dr. Lilian Funder again, referring to an agreement signed between the Vatican and the Dominican government in 1954, an agreement that is still current.
Dominican Republic, we have also the Concordato. The Concordato is an agreement between Vaticano and the government of Dominican Republic. So we have that from Trujillo. And it's very important because it's the power of the religion in everything, including the woman's life. And if you open these three cases, the woman will recognize a little bit that they are the owner of her own body. And that's too much for our system.
Can you tell us anything about, for example, any polling on general public opinion on the issue of abortion in the DR?
So when it comes to the numbers, there was a 2006 study that said that close to 70% of the population is Catholic, whether they practice or don't practice. And even though some Catholic organizations have actually also come out in support of the three causales, there's still a lot of misinformation. Sarai Figuereo actually spoke to me about this, so here's some of what she had to say.
For example, the church and stuff in the conservative like sites, they are doing a job of giving misinformation to people. Like people, when they speak about abortion, they don't speak about tres causales, the three causals. They speak about like abortion in general. And if you see there, if they're talking about abortion and they show pictures, they show like babies that are almost going to be like born. So it's like,
term.
Yeah, so it's like there is a lot of misinformation and people, we are trying like according to our reality and the time we have to educate people and show them what are the three causales and why it's important for everybody, but not everybody knows.
The camp, it stood for 73 days, and it ended with the march on May 23rd.
That's a long time to be out there protesting in the hot, hot sun and hot nights in the DR. The president, Luis Abinader, did not push to pass the three causales in the new penal code. So then what happened?
So right now what happened in Congress is that they did pass a first reading of the new penal code, and it did include one of the three causales.
146 sí's, 14 no's. Por lo tanto, el proyecto está aprobado en primera lectura constitucional.
Abortion would be allowed if the woman's health was at risk. And now they have to make sure that the Senate passes this in order for this one causal to be permitted.
Wow.
But yeah, yeah. And it's not a surprise that this is the one that passed, because, I mean, it caught the international attention, right? It caught the attention of the International Commission of Human Rights. The United Nations, you know, has this as one of the tenets of basic human rights for women and girls. But the other two cases are also very, very important here, Maria, especially the case of rape and of women or girls who become pregnant as a result of a rape. Because until recently, child marriage was allowed in the Dominican Republic. It was only made illegal in January of this year.
Wow.
And you know, Maria, this is, I know as a reporter, this is something that you often talk about, which is how you're not supposed to bring the personal into the reporting, right? And you're not supposed to bring sort of your own story. But I found out recently that my grandmother, may she continue to rest in peace, used to work at an abortion clinic in the 60s. And the amount of shame when it comes to that story is insane. Like, I found out about this in passing. It was sort of just mentioned by my aunt, like, oh yeah, my mom used to work at an abortion clinic in the 60s. And I have never heard about it again. I have tried to find more information about, you know, where was the clinic or how long did she work there? What did she do while she was there? And I haven't found any information. And I think this just speaks to the shame that women feel when it comes to abortion. And also to how this issue isn't new. This isn't new, and people have been having abortions in secret for decades, if not more.
Centuries.
In Dominican Republic. Centuries. Yes, I'm like, for centuries. Ages.
For centuries. For centuries.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Oftentimes, people in this country don't realize how there is really, you know, a Latin American Caribbean consciousness, and that there's a political vibe that can happen around this entire area. And so this fight for women's reproductive rights and their ability to decide what's happening with their own bodies is not happening in a vacuum in the region. So this isn't new, right? Because there really have been powerful movements across Latin America that are essentially really attempting to overturn these restrictive kind of legislation. So in Argentina, women have been protesting for years. And finally, a new law was passed in December of 2020, expanding access to legal abortion. And, you know, people have been seeing a pretty serious activist movement coming out of Chile. And this has been marked by the women and their allies all wearing green, carrying green handkerchiefs. So I'm wondering, do the Dominican activists see themselves as part of what's being called this green wave that's expanding throughout Latin America?
Yes. Yes, I absolutely do feel that. And the activists here do see themselves in that way. I mean, not only do they wear green, they also have taken on some of the chants that women around and across Latin America use. And they lean on these cases in other countries to make strategic moves, to make strategic decisions, and to also feel a sense of unity. So Sarai, one of the activists, this is what she told me at the camp.
The color green, like during all these years, have represented like the fight in favor of abortion, of deciding for your own body, that your reproductive rights, what you want to do. And we take it too, because this is not only one or two people. It's not only us. It's like women and people with the ability of getting pregnant all over the world have this right, and we are fighting for the same. And this is maybe the color and the symbol that makes you be like the same, united.
And during the march on May 23rd, a singer called Isade performed what she called the Dominican version of the song Canción Sin Miedo. This is a song that was composed by a Mexican singer, her name is Vivir Quintana, about women who are missing in Mexico. And she rewrote the song with others in a collective to include lines like, for young girls who are raped, for mothers asking for justice.
Okay, Amanda, so tell us about what's going to happen next in the DR. Where do you see this going? And what about these activists?
Right now, even though the camp has ended, Sarai told me that they will still be organizing talks and activities. And to them, this has further bonded a community of activists that has been fighting for decades for the three causales to pass. So even though before I shared that the activists were being attacked and sometimes they felt fear of showing their support, the camp and the protests also created a space for people to show solidarity. And if anything, it seems that the conversation might be shifting. Here's Sarai during the May 23rd march.
And we are being heard, and it feels good, and it doesn't stop here, right? Mm. So we know the people we have here, and we will multiply this. Like, people will speak to their families, to their friends, and we will spread the word. Yeah, so yeah, I feel so excited. This is only, we always say, this is just the beginning. Like, we have many things to do. Even if they approve the Tres Causales, there are many things to do that we have to do. But this is a step, and a big one. So yeah, I'm really happy.
Thank you. Gracias.
Amanda, thank you so much for your reporting on the ground in the Dominican Republic. We really appreciate it.
Maria, thank you so much for having me.
This episode was reported by Amanda Alcantara, produced by Victoria Estrada, and edited by Marta Martinez. The Latino USA team includes Andrea Lopez Cruzado, Mike Sargent, Julieta Martinelli, Ginny Montalvo, Alejandra Salazar, Reinaldo Leaños Jr., and Julia Rocha, with help from Raúl Pérez. Our editorial director is Julio Ricardo Varela. Our engineers are Stephanie LeBeau, Julia Caruso, and Leah Shaw Dameron, with help from Gabriela Baez. Our digital editor is Luis Luna. Our New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow is Maria Esquinca. Our intern is Oscar de Leon. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, look for us on social media. Ahí los veo. Bye.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the Heising Simons Foundation, unlocking knowledge, opportunity, and possibilities. More at hsfoundation.org. W.K. Kellogg Foundation, a partner with communities where children come first. And the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide.
Enjoy Cabarete, you lucky girl. See you later. I'm Maria Hinojosa, and next time on Latino USA, after Hurricane Maria, an eccentric community of cryptocurrency investors arrives in Puerto Rico with promises to change everything.
This is a decentralized movement. I'm not aware of anyone building any gated community. I think
it's
there are
happening
one.
Now!
But what do Puerto Ricans think about that? That's next time on Latino USA.